So we have been marching through Genesis, and we're coming to the end. The next couple weeks, we're going to finish up in the book of Genesis, and we're actually going to cover about 13 chapters today. You know I can do it, because you know how fast I fly through this stuff. But the focus tonight, we are going to cover parts, hopefully, of all 13 chapters, or at least a majority of them, because we're going to look at the life of Joseph from the perspective of forgiveness. And I have found that Joseph's life has been had an incredible impact on me in the area of forgiveness. Because if this man could forgive his brothers, then there's really not much any of us could say we can't forgive. Chris, can you do it again? We got some more coming out. They'll be hot off the presses in just a minute.
Right.
You need a hot one. So, we've been looking at the life of Joseph for the last couple weeks in different aspects, but tonight I want to focus in specifically on his ability to forgive, which is actually just mind-boggling to me. So to begin with, I want to go through this relationship that he had with his brothers and what resulted from that. So if you look in chapter 37 with me, we're in Genesis chapter 37. We find that to begin with, Joseph's brothers absolutely hated his guts. He was the youngest at the time of 11 brothers, and then a 12th brother was born later, Benjamin. But from the time he was young, evidently his brothers couldn't stand him. And we see in chapter 37 several times that it shows how much his brothers absolutely hated him. Now, a lot of people hate their siblings, but very few get to this point. Okay? So in verse 4, we find, when his brothers saw that their father loved him more than any of them, they hated him and could not speak a kind word to him. You've been in a situation like that where somebody that you were around all the time couldn't think of anything nice to say to you at all. Everything out of them was nothing but disdain and hatred. In verse 5, Joseph had a dream, and when he told it to his brothers, they hated him all the more. They already couldn't say a kind word to him. Now they hate him even more than that, which on the scale of hatred is getting pretty severe. Then in verse 8, his brothers said to him, "Do you intend to reign over us? Will you actually rule us?" And they hated him all the more because of his dream and what he had said. You see the hatred building in them. In verse 11, his brothers were jealous of him, but his father kept this matter in mind. Then we go forward to verse 18. So Joseph went after his brothers and found them near Dothan, but they saw him in the distance, and before he reached them, they plotted to kill him. This is how much they hated him. Just the sight of him. Let's go ahead and kill him. Verse 19, "Here comes that dreamer," they said to each other. "Come now, let's kill him and throw him into one of these cisterns and say the ferocious animal devoured him. Then we'll see what comes of his dreams." Well, as we know, they didn't kill him. They decide to go ahead instead and sell him in slavery. And so in verse 28, we see, "When the Midianite merchants came by, his brothers pulled Joseph up out of the cistern and sold him for 20 shekels of silver to the Ishmaelites, who took him to Egypt." The reason they didn't kill him is that Judah says, "Look, there's really no profit in killing him. If we sell him, we can make some money." That's how much they hated his guts. So, you're the youngest of 11. Second youngest of 12. Probably at that point, Benjamin had been born. Your brothers sell you into slavery. Would you forgive them at that point? Would you ever want to see them again without murderous thoughts? Would you live the rest of your life pining for their death, scheming for their death, scheming for the time when I see them, I'll get my reward. I'll get my revenge. That wasn't his attitude, but wouldn't that be ours? Wouldn't that be the most natural thing? So, not only does he get sold into slavery, but he gets taken to Egypt. And so we find in chapter 39, verse 1, now Joseph had been taken down to Egypt. Potiphar, an Egyptian who was one of Pharaoh's officials, the captain of the guard, bought him from the Ishmaelites who had taken him there. So now Joseph is in Potiphar's house. He's Potiphar's slave, his servant. And we don't know exactly the time period that he was there. Scripture doesn't tell us exactly how many years he was there compared to how many years he was in prison. But I can tell you between Potiphar's house and prison, we're talking 20 years. So, and I'll show you why I know that in a minute. He's at Potiphar's house. Everything's going well. Lord's hand is with him. He rises to second in power over all of Potiphar's house. He's Potiphar's right-hand man. Not so bad. He's a slave, but he's in good shape. So maybe he doesn't hate his brother so much at this point. Hey, you know, it's not too bad of an existence. At least I don't have to deal with 11 brothers. I got the run of the place. I'm doing good, with the exception. Potiphar's wife takes a shine to him and comes on to him. And when he refuses to go to bed with her because he does not want to sin against God, she accuses him of rape. Potiphar hears his wife complain of attempted rape, so throws him in prison. We see in verse 20, Joseph's master took him and put him in prison, the place where the king's prisoners were confined. Wonderful. Brothers sell him into slavery. He's making his way, doing the best he can. Now he's unjustly accused, and he's thrown in prison. Wouldn't you just fester like a boil, thinking about how your brothers caused all of this? Thinking about how, if they hadn't been so jealous of you, in their hatred of you, you would be able to be back home with your father who loves you so much, with your younger brother that you love. You would be with family instead of rotting away in some prison. I'm just telling you what in my flesh I would do. Okay. So he's thrown in prison, but God's with him again. Verse 21, the Lord was with him. He showed him kindness and granted him favor in the eyes of the prison warden. So the warden put Joseph in charge of all those held in prison, and he was made responsible for all that was done there. Warden paid no attention to anything under Joseph's care because the Lord was with Joseph and gave him success in whatever he did. So then what happens? You have two prisoners. You have the cupbearer to Pharaoh, and you have the baker for Pharaoh, who are both thrown in prison. We don't know exactly why, but they're thrown in prison, and they both have these dreams. Now Joseph comes to him and says, hey, what's going on with you? Why is your face so sad? And they said, we've had these horrible dreams. We don't know how to interpret them. And he says, look, Lord can interpret them. Tell me the dreams. And so he interprets the dreams for them. He lets the cupbearer know, in 3 days, Pharaoh is going to lift up your head and you will again be cupbearer to the king. Tells the baker, in 3 days, Pharaoh is going to lift up your head, except he's going to lift it off your shoulders and you will be hanged to death. And then he tells the cupbearer, look, when you get reestablished in the Pharaoh, please tell him about me. I've been unjustly put here. I don't deserve to be here. Please put in a good word for me. Sure, I sure will. And we find in verse 1 of chapter 41, actually in verse 23 of chapter 40, the chief cupbearer, however, did not remember Joseph. So you can imagine Joseph getting all excited. God's done this great thing through him. Now the cupbearer is going to go back to Pharaoh, plead his case. He's going to get out of prison. And then he waits. And then he waits. And then he waits. Cupbearer forgets about him. For how long does the cupbearer forget about him? Chapter 41, verse 1. When 2 full years had passed, That's how long the cupbearer forgot about him. I don't know about you, but all of my childhood comes back at this point. And I struggle with this anger that's uncontrollable. My stupid brothers, I'm going to kill them if I ever get a chance. Now, Joseph winds up interpreting the Pharaoh's dreams. And again, as the common theme that's going on here, he was made second in command at Potiphar's house. He's made second in command in the jail, even though he's a prisoner. And now he's made second in command over all of Egypt, second only to the Pharaoh. So we see what happens in chapter 41, verse 15. Pharaoh said to Joseph, I had a dream. No one can interpret it, but I've heard it said of you that when you hear a dream, you can interpret it. I cannot do it, Joseph replied to Pharaoh, but God will give Pharaoh the answer he desires. So Pharaoh tells him the dream. Joseph interprets the dream. Then go to verse 25. Joseph said to Pharaoh, the dreams of Pharaoh are one and the same. God has revealed to Pharaoh what he's about to do. And then he goes in detail. You've had this dream, two dreams. They both mean the same thing. There's going to be 7 years of plenty in the land. God is going to give extra harvest. And then there'll be 7 years of famine. So Pharaoh, here's what you got to do. Get somebody who's really smart. Run the whole show. Get them to collect 20% of all that's harvested for those 7 years of plenty. We'll sock it away in a bunch of silos. And then when there's 7 years of famine, the people will be saved through it. Pharaoh says, wow, never heard of anybody as smart as you. You need to be in charge of it. You see, in verse 37, the plan seemed good to Pharaoh and to all the officials. So Pharaoh asked them, can we find anyone like this man, one in whom is the Spirit of God? Then Pharaoh said to Joseph, since God has made all this known to you, there is no one so discerning and wise as you. You shall be in charge of my palace, and all my people are to submit to your orders. Only with respect to the throne will I be greater than you. And then it goes in detail and says how highly Joseph is honored. Now you might think, during this period of Joseph's life, if this happened to you and I, we would stop hating our brothers at this point and be more willing to forgive them. I don't think so. At this point, I'm thinking, ha, I'm second in command over all. Now I really can put my brothers to death if I ever see them again. Think about it. You would have had 20 years. How do I know 20 years? Because in verse 46, it says Joseph was 37. Oh, not 20 years. I'm sorry. Joseph was 30 years old. 13 years. I thought it said 37. 13 years had gone by. He was 30. How do I know 13? Because he was 17 when all this started, we found out in chapter 37. Maybe that's where 37 was in my head. So Joseph was 30 years old when he entered the service of Pharaoh, king of Egypt. And so a total of 13 years have gone by for him to really, really think of all the different ways he could torture his brothers. And now he has the power to do so. You know, in the movies, they would really get off, go out and use their power to track down the brothers and put them to death, right? All right, so now Joseph is in charge of dispensing the grain during the 7 years of famine. He collects the grain and then he dispenses it. You see in chapter 41, verse 53, the 7 years of abundance in Egypt came to an end and the 7 years of famine began, just as Joseph had said. That's got to feel good, right? God had revealed it, and sure enough, worked out exactly like Joseph says. There was a famine in all the other lands, but in the whole land of Egypt there was food. When all Egypt began to feel the famine, the people cried to Pharaoh for food. Then Pharaoh told all the Egyptians, go to Joseph. Go to Joseph and do what he tells you. So now what happens? Well, we find out in the next chapter, in chapter 42, that the famine reaches Joseph's family. And they are feeling the pinch. They have no food, or they're not they're not growing any food. We find they have lots of stored stuff, but they're running out of grain for bread. And so Jacob, Israel, it says in chapter 42, verse 1, when Jacob learned that there was grain in Egypt, he said to his sons, "Why do you just keep looking at each other?" He continued, "I've heard there's grain in Egypt. Go down there and buy some for us so that we may live and not die." So what happens? The brothers go to Egypt, and they have to stand before Joseph. What a great day. Can you imagine? Come out, see your brothers there. Oh, yeah, if they had known Joseph was there, they would not have gone. In verse 6, "Now Joseph was the governor of the land, the one who sold grain to all its people. So when Joseph's brothers arrived, they bowed down to him with their faces to the ground. As soon as Joseph saw his brothers, he recognized them, but he pretended to be a stranger and spoke harshly to them." Now, don't you think as soon as he saw them bowing down to him, he remembered the dream he had? You got to think that. So would you think, well, God had shown me that dream so that I would know my victory over my enemies was at hand? I mean, isn't that the way our minds might work? Look at this. God has delivered them right into my hands just like he showed me. And yet this wasn't Joseph's heart. This is what amazes me about Joseph. What amazes me about Joseph is his heart never goes to the place of bitterness and vengeance. Instead, he operates in forgiveness. You make it sound so easy, Louis. You make it sound like absolutely everybody's always going to respond this way. Sure. Sure. You don't get mad at those guys that come and steal your vegetables? Yeah, I know you do. I know you do. And that is, yeah, and absolutely. But there is a struggle that occurs. It's not just the easiest thing to do. Right. Now. Oh, this was absolutely God. Yeah, well, that could be too. Sure. Joseph is being tested in his faith. Sure. Well, it's interesting. God told him ahead of time it was going to happen. When he was young, he gave him a dream that all of his brothers would bow down to him. Okay? And so then it comes true. But what's he going to do with it? Listen, I've known folks that have gotten to where God has spoken something to them, and they have totally taken it the wrong way. Totally applied it in ways that there's no way God was telling them. You can hear from God and not interpret that correctly. Well, you understand what I'm saying?
First. I mean,
we don't know why he spoke harshly to him.
No.
Did he, you know, you know, he might have at this point been thinking, "Watch what I do to you." Or he might have from the beginning wanted to see his brother and his dad. You know, and want to see how they would react. I don't know.
The evening he caught the man in the garden between Corey, Amy, and Louie, I was glad I was locked up in the truck.
Yeah, I mean, all right. Now, what does Joseph do now? This is an interesting thing, and it may be that at first he's taken out his vengeance. I don't know. I don't think so either, because
he did that just because that he has to cover up his his identity at that time, because he was doing what God told him to do even then.
I think so too. So Joseph says to him, "Look, 11 of you? Okay, where's the 11th, first of all? There's 10 of them that are there. But they say there are 11 altogether. There used to be 12, but one is gone. Okay, where's the other one? You're a bunch of spies. You're giving me a story here. All of you together, a bunch of spies." And then he says, "If you really do have a younger brother, go get him. Y'all can stay here. One of you can just go get him." Evidently, they don't jump at this. I don't know why, because it says in verse 14, Joseph said to them, "It's just as I told you, you're spies, and this is how you'll be tested. Surely as Pharaoh lives, you will not leave this place until your younger brother comes here. Send one of your number to get your brother. The rest of you will be kept in prison so that your words may be tested to see if you are telling the truth. If you're not, then surely as Pharaoh lives, you're spies." And he put them all in custody for 3 days. Now, if he's saying, go send one, why is he putting them all in custody? Yeah, maybe, you know, like, see what I can do to you. But that's just it. He doesn't send one.
No, that's what I'm saying. He sets them all in there to where the person he does end up going to get them.
But Judy, what I'm telling you, he puts them all in there,
right,
and then frees all but one. He never sends just one.
Right. But that was so. He wanted to, if it, like you started out to say, one of you go, but he thought, well, let them.
Yeah.
If they decide that, well, then he changed the plan himself. He changed it.
Sounds reasonable. So they get a taste for 3 days. And on the third day, Joseph said to them, "Do this and you'll live, for I fear God. If you're honest men, let one of your brothers stay here in prison, and the rest of you go." So he keeps Simeon, sends the rest home. So the rest get home and they say, "Dad, Jacob, Israel, you got to let Benjamin come back with us." And Jacob says, "No way, it'll kill me. Joseph's already gone. Benjamin's the other son of Rachel, my beloved wife. It'll kill me. You can't." He's allowing Simeon to die in prison because he can't part with his youngest. I mean, that just always kills me. He just cut him loose. Whatever. Simeon, he's just on his own. He's old enough. Yeah, he did. He did.
He's the one responsible for all the hatred and all that stuff.
Absolutely. This dysfunctional family has a patriarch. Absolutely. Yep. Now, interesting thing. Look at verse 35 of chapter 42. As they're emptying their sacks, there in each man's sack was his pouch of silver. Oh, man, you got to be kidding me. They go to get grain. They go to pay. They pay. They get the grain, they get back home, and not only do they have grain in their sacks, but they have all their money there too. So now if we go back, we're going to be accused of stealing when we tried to pay. What the heck are we going to do now? So nothing happens for a while. In chapter 43, now the famine was still severe in the land. So when they had eaten all the grain they had bought from Egypt, their father said to them, "Go back and buy us a little more food." And they say, "Dad, we can't go back. We can't go back unless you let Benjamin go." So what does Israel say? "Woe is me. Go back. Take Benjamin. And I'm going to die." So they do. They take Benjamin. They go back. And they come back to Joseph. If you go to verse 19 of chapter 43. So they went up to Joseph's steward and spoke to him at the entrance to the house. "Please, sir," they said, "we came down here the first time to buy food, but at the place where we stopped for the night, we opened our sacks and each of us found his silver, the exact weight in the mouth of his sack. So we have brought it back with us. We have also brought additional silver with us to buy food. We don't know who put silver in our sacks." "It's all right," he said. "Don't be afraid. Your God, the God of your father, has given your treasure in your sacks. I received your silver." Then he brought Simeon out to them. Steward took the men into Joseph's house, gave them water to wash their feet, provided fodder for their donkeys. They prepared their gifts for Joseph's arrival at noon because they had heard that they were to eat there. When Joseph came home, they presented to him the gifts they had brought into the house, and they bowed down to him before the ground, down before him to the ground. He asked them how they were, and then he said, "How is your aged father you told me about? Is he still living?" They replied, "Your servant, our father, is still alive and well." And they bowed low to pay him honor. As he looked about and saw his brother Benjamin, his own mother's son, he asked, "Is this your youngest brother, the one you told me about?" And he said, "God be gracious to you, my son." Deeply moved at the sight of his brother, Joseph hurried out and looked for a place to weep. He went into his private room and wept there. And then came back more determined than ever to kill his brothers, who kept him away from his youngest for his whole life. No. After he had washed his face, he came out, and controlling himself, he said, "Serve the food." They served him by himself, the brothers by themselves, and the Egyptians who ate with him by themselves, because Egyptians could not eat with Hebrews, for that's detestable to Egyptians. The men had been seated before him in the order of their ages, from the firstborn to the youngest, and they looked at each other in astonishment. When portions were served to them from Joseph's table, Benjamin's portion was five times as much as anyone else's. So they feasted and drank freely with him. So now he sends them on their way again, puts their silver back in their sacks, and this time takes his chalice, puts it in the mouth of Benjamin's sack. So all the brothers leave. They're on their way home. And then Joseph says, "Go get them." Sends out a steward with the army or some soldiers, whatever. And they catch up to the brothers and say, "Why are you stealing from Joseph? We haven't stolen anything." "Sure you have. Look, if anybody here has anything, you can take and kill that person and put the rest of us to slavery, or put that person in jail and make the rest of us slaves." "Okay, let's do it." So, in verse 11 of chapter 44, each of them quickly lowered his sack to the ground and opened it. Then the steward proceeded to search, beginning with the oldest and ending with the youngest. The cup was found in Benjamin's sack. At this, they tore their clothes, and they all loaded their donkeys and returned to the city. Joseph was still in the house when Judah and his brothers came in, and they threw themselves to the ground before him. Joseph said to them, "What is this you have done? Don't you know that a man like me can find out things by divination?" "What can we say to my lord?" Judah replied. "What can we say? How can we prove our innocence? God has uncovered your servant's guilt. We are now my lord's slaves, we ourselves and the one who is found to have the cup." But Joseph said, "Far be it from me to do such a thing. Only the man who is found to have the cup will become my slave. The rest of you can go back to your father in peace." Maybe Joseph was setting it up to where Benjamin can stay with him, get rid of the rest of them. Forget them. Get him out of the picture. I don't know. Judah went up to him and he just pleads with him. Now, what's interesting to this? Well, and that could be too. What would they do? Would they treat Benjamin the same way they treated Joseph? What was their character like? Were they the same? Who knows? But an interesting thing is what happens hang on a second shoot where is it all right anyway Yeah, chapter 42. I want to back up for a minute. I missed it. Chapter 42. Listen to what earlier the brothers decide. Chapter 42, verses 21 through 23. They said to one another, "Surely we are being punished because of our brother. We saw how distressed he was when he pleaded with us for his life, but we would not listen. That's why this distress has come upon us." If Joseph really was harboring bitterness in his heart, hearing that, being reminded of how he cried and cried and cried and they wouldn't listen and hard-heartedly sold him into slavery, that would have just tipped him over the edge, right? But that's not what happens. Reuben replied, "Didn't I tell you not to sin against the boy, but you wouldn't listen? Now we must give an accounting of for his blood." They didn't understand that Joseph could understand them since he was using an interpreter. What did Joseph do? He turned away from them and began to weep. So obviously at this point we see that his heart's not hard towards his brothers. And so then when all of this goes on, finally Joseph can't deal with it any longer. They come back and they're pleading with him, please don't kill us, please don't take Benjamin away from us. And in chapter 45, then Joseph could no longer control himself before all his servants, his attendants, and he cried out, have everyone leave my presence. So there was no one with Joseph when he made himself known to his brothers. And he wept so loudly that the Egyptians heard him, and Pharaoh's household heard about it. He didn't care. Joseph said to his brothers, I am Joseph. Is my father still living? But his brothers were not able to answer him because they were terrified at his presence. Then Joseph said to his brothers, come close to me. When they had done so, he said, I am your brother Joseph, the one you sold into Egypt. And now do not be distressed and do not be angry with yourselves for selling me here, because it was to save lives that God sent me ahead of you. For 2 years now, there's been a famine in the land, and for the next 5 years, there will not be plowing and reaping. But God sent me ahead of you to preserve for you a remnant on earth and to save your lives by a great deliverance. So then it was not you who sent me here, but God. He made me father to Pharaoh, lord of his entire household, and ruler of all Egypt. So they go back, they get their father, they all move to Egypt in a place called Goshen, and then go to chapter 50. They must have had to just come clean. I don't know. I think it would have been harder for Jacob to forgive them than Joseph, but they never tell us. The Bible leaves so much unexplained. So, it's interesting. Jacob dies, lives quite a few years in Egypt, and when he dies, he is honored by Pharaoh and the Egyptians. Okay, it's a really interesting thing. Now, when he's gone, chapter 50, verse 15, Joseph's brothers are terrified. They figure when Jacob's there, Joseph's not going to try to get back at him. When Joseph's brothers saw that their father was dead, they said, what if Joseph holds a grudge against us and pays us back for all the wrongs we did to him? So they sent word to Joseph saying, your father left these instructions before he died. This is what you were to say to Joseph. I ask you to forgive your brothers the sins and wrongs they committed in treating you so badly. Now, please forgive the sins of the servants of the God of your father. When the message came to him, Joseph wept. Why do you think he wept? Yeah, but I think it's more than that. He obviously knew they were lying. I mean, I think it was more, why can't they see I'm not trying to get revenge? Yeah, it just broke his heart. After all those years. Don't you think God weeps over us? Why can't you understand what forgiveness is, what I've offered you? His brothers then came and threw themselves down before him. We are your slaves, they said. But Joseph said to them, do not be afraid. Am I in the place of God? You intended to harm me. Notice, he tells them, I know. You know, I'm not going to try to sugarcoat this. God doesn't sugarcoat our sin when he forgives us. You are a sinner. You deserve this. But you're not going to get what you deserve. You're going to get mercy. You're going to get grace instead. You intended to harm me, but God intended it for good, to accomplish what is now being done, the saving of many lives. So then don't be afraid. I'll provide for you and your children. And he reassured them and spoke kindly to them. Now look, now I got to finish the whole rest of the paper. How could he do this? This is what I really want to get to. How could Joseph have a heart that would forgive like this? I mean, and think about the most horrible things that people can do to each other and how hard it is for us to forgive each other. I mean, look, I know people who won't forgive me for some flippant remark I made 20 years ago. I didn't even realize I made. You know, how many times has somebody been offended with you and you had no idea? And years later, somebody else says, yeah, they've been offended so long. Really? What did I do? Right? How easily we get offended with each other and won't forgive. And yet Joseph was able to forgive this. How could he do it? Well, some of the things I think that play into it is, first of all, he believed that the Lord was in control and not his brothers. And I think we have to take that in consideration. When something happens to us, when something bad happens to us, I think we need to remember, first of all, God's in control. God's in control. Okay? Our Lord and Savior Jesus Christ told Pontius Pilate, I would not be in your hands except that my Father allowed it to happen. Okay? You think you're in control? No. My Father's in control, and that's, he's allowed me to go through this. Okay? And I find that to be just, I need to hold on to that when bad things are going on. Especially when there's a person that is responsible for those bad things happening to me. God is in control. The other verse that goes into my mind is Ephesians 6. It said, our struggle is not against flesh and blood, but against the powers and principalities of this dark world. Okay, that person may be coming against me, but it's Satan behind it. But still, God's sovereign and in control, even over what Satan wants to do. Okay, so he tells his brothers, you meant this for evil. God's the one that caused it to happen, and he meant it for good. He recognized that vengeance belongs to the Lord. He says, am I in the place of God? Now, what's he mean by that? Why do you think that I'm going to take vengeance on you? Vengeance is the Lord's business, not mine. And we need to remember that. You want to get revenge on that person? Vengeance, says the Lord, is his, not ours. Right. Lord, do your vengeance. Yeah. Yeah, but I think even before that he didn't have bitterness on his heart. I think the way we see these things, here's another reason why I think he was able to forgive his brothers. He recognized the hand of God at work in all the things. Constantly. When it's time to interpret a dream, I can't interpret the dream, but God can, so tell me the dream. That blows my mind.
Well, he knew from a young age that God would use him because he was an interpreter of dreams.
That's right.
So that told them there that he was God's interpreter.
So he was able to say, God has always been with me through all of these situations. How could I allow bitterness and anger and hatred to fester in me when the goodness of God is apparent in my life? We have to remember that. We want to hold something against somebody. Really, let's focus on what God's up to. Let's stop focusing up what man's up to. Let's focus on what God's up to. What is God doing in this situation? He made it his goal to honor God with his life. He tells Potiphar's wife, how could I do this and sin against God? Right? How could I sin against your husband, but how could I sin against God? I want to honor God with my life. Bitterness and rage don't honor God. The book of James says that he cared about others and took the focus off himself. It's amazing to me, here he is in prison, should be going, woe is me, mad at the world, and instead, Baker and the cupbearer are having a tough day, and he looks over and goes, hey, what's going on with you guys? Why aren't you smiling? They're in jail, right? I just go, I'm in prison, right? Wait a minute. You know, we've had good times here. He was faithful to whatever he was appointed to do. And the bottom line, he put up with suffering because he knew that God had a bigger plan. He put up with suffering because he knew that God had a bigger plan. Now, I got to tell you, I don't think he knew what the plan was from the beginning. But when it all came together, he was able to see it. So it's not like he was going, oh, one day I'm going to save all of Egypt and my brothers are going to come to me and I'm going to save their lives, so I'm going to go through this. We always say, you know, well, I wish God would show me why I'm having to go through this trial because I'd be able to do the trial. No, God doesn't do that. Right, it's not faith. If he shows you the end result, you have to believe that there is an end result. That's right. Like Abraham and Sarah, right? Hey, you're supposed to be a big nation coming out of you. Here, take Hagar. Get a baby through her. Right? Stop waiting for God. Let's go ahead and do this. Let's help him out. Yeah, you're right.
I wish you hadn't done that, so maybe the Arabs wouldn't be where they are today.
You're not kidding. Right. And then you can look at all the benefits that came from forgiveness, all the things he would have missed out on if he allowed bitterness to control. Lord, I thank you. It's only through you that we can forgive, because it's only the forgiveness that we've received from you that lets us know what forgiveness even means. Lord, so let us contemplate your glory and the free grace and mercy that you've bestowed on us so that we can bestow that on others. Lord, give us a heart of love so that bitterness would always be far from us. I pray in Christ. Amen.